news, weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus. You won't know if you don't listen.
Okay, thank you so much for joining me. It is March 1st. Can you believe it's March already? What happened in January? Anyway, it's March 1st. I am here live on Sundays from 10 to noon. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. I thank you so much for joining me on iHub Radio. And there's a whole lot to talk about, as always. I want to start out by talking a little bit about what's going on with this coronavirus. Let me start by saying I heard maybe the best comment on everything that's been all over the media, from Fox News to MSNBC to people writing columns to network news to the president to the vice president. I've been listening to all of it. And the person who said maybe the smartest thing I've heard yet. Do you remember who General Honoré is? The wonderful, soft-spoken, the guy who, the general who was sent in to take charge of what happened in New Orleans after that horrible hurricane. And I heard him interviewed the other day, because this is a man who does know how to marshal forces and how to both give appropriate concerning statements and reinforcing, encouraging statements. And General Honoré said, with regard to what is going on right now about the coronavirus, he said, "Let's not get stuck on stupid." Although he said it with a much nicer accent than I did. So there are several things about this virus that I want to comment on. And obviously, it is something to be concerned about. The number of cases worldwide is way too many. It seems to have finally slowed its expansion in China, but it is all over the world. And we have had our first death from the coronavirus here in the United States, in the state of Washington. But here's what drove me crazy this week. Concern about our readiness to handle this kind of thing, especially after this administration got rid of the pandemic group that was working in the West Wing administration. They had a small group that was specifically, in fact, I think it was set up by President Obama, which is probably why they got rid of it. But they got rid of the very people who were supposed to be planning for and reacting to something like this happening. And the White House, the president was over in India when the worst of the news hit and when the stock market started tanking. And I read an article that detailed, from somebody who was on the plane, it detailed the president's response as he was flying back from India and watching TV. Everybody else was sleeping. He was watching TV and saw the head of the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, say something on television that made it clear that this virus was something to take seriously. And I believe she said something like, it's not a question of if it comes to America, it's a question of when. Well, evidently the president just went nuts when he heard that. Because anything that even comes close to questioning his legitimacy or his capability or the ability of the administration to be effective drives him crazy. And so the fact that the stock market tanked so badly the first day and then made a slight recovery but still tanked the second, and we've had a whole week where the stock market lost so much, and that's what President Trump uses as his kind of report card on how wonderful he's doing. And so he said that the Democrats were to blame for the stock market crash because they were reacting so panicked about this virus. And the things they were saying and the criticisms of his administration and how it was all being responded to and handled early on, he saw that as their fault that the stock market crashed. So here's my question. Why does concern expressed genuinely about the administration's readiness to deal with something like that, why is that considered political? But when Trump blames the Democrats for the fall of the stock market, that's somehow not political. I mean, that's just nuts. With regard to the stock market, even before the truth about what was going on here in our own country, and we don't even know how many cases there really are because it turns out they don't really know for sure, they meaning health professionals all over the world, don't really know for sure what the incubation period is for this virus. They don't know if people show symptoms immediately or if it takes 1 or 2 weeks for symptoms to develop. They do know that anyone who is compromised over a certain age or somebody who already has health problems, particularly any kind of lung problems, that tends to make them more vulnerable. But they don't even know. We do know that in the couple of cases in Northern California, they have no idea how these people got exposed. And yet we do know that when the administration responded to the concerns from family members about the people who, the Americans, who had been quarantined as a result of that cruise ship in Japan having been infected, and with so many people on board showing symptoms or responding positively to the virus, the Americans were stuck on that ship, and the president and the administration decided to bring them home. Their families were squawking. People on the ship were begging to be taken off that ship and brought home. Well, they brought them home. And they brought many of them to Travis Air Force Base in Northern California. But the people who were welcoming them off the plane, some of whom did have symptoms and did seem to have the virus, and some who had been quarantined just as a precaution, when they came off the plane, the people who greeted them and got them into some kind of secluded quarantine were not even properly attired in the kinds of protective gear that is necessary to protect themselves. And then it turns out that some of the people who worked on that base were free to go walk around the community when they were not working. So who knows how it's transmitted or how long it takes to develop, or whether some of these cases, the two in Northern California in particular, were exposed in some way to people who had been exposed as a result of inappropriate precautions having been taken when they were brought back from being in quarantine on that ship. I mean, this is something to be concerned about. I have a girlfriend who lives in two different places. She lives in Hawaii and she lives in Samoa. She's my best friend. She's the one who married my cousin in Samoa, and they run a resort in Samoa. Well, they just flew back from Samoa to Honolulu. 3 days ago, they came off the plane from Samoa. They went through immigration clearance and were asked no questions whatsoever. They were not asked, had they been gone from the United States for how long? What other countries might they have visited when they came off this plane from Samoa? No questions asked. And they just walked straight through after they said, you know, they were coming home to Hawaii, and the guy said, fine, go on through. Now, my girlfriend said they were stopped by a woman with a clipboard after they cleared through immigration. And the woman came up to them and said, may I ask you a few questions? And my girlfriend said, sure. And among the questions they were asked, did the person who pushed you through immigration ask you any questions about where you had been or where you were coming back from? Did they ask how many other countries you might have been? And my girlfriend honestly said, no, they didn't ask us anything. So somebody was checking on whether or not there were any protocols in place for clearing people coming through the Honolulu airport. 3 days ago. Now, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, has issued travel warnings for countries that have been affected by the virus. And the following countries and territories are getting increased guidance from the CDC. China, clearly. South Korea, Japan, Italy, Hong Kong, and Iran. And so, as this is spreading, and it has been found now in countries all over the world, in every hemisphere, as this is happening, here are the guidelines for what you should be aware of. If you feel ill with a fever and or a cough and or any shortness of breath, you should immediately call your doctor. Do not go to the emergency room unless you are so ill that you absolutely need immediate help, in which case call 911 and tell them what your symptoms are so that when 911 shows up, they can be properly protected just in case. But if you have fever or a cough or shortness of breath, call your doctor and report your symptoms and let the doctor tell you what you need to do. Wearing a mask, that doesn't help you be protected from anyone else who might have symptoms. But if you have symptoms, you should wear a mask. That's when the mask can make a difference, so that since we don't know for sure how it is transmitted or how quickly, so that at the very least, if you cough or you sneeze, you're not putting that out into the air for everyone around you. That's where a mask can make a difference. If you have symptoms, put on a mask. Otherwise, call your doctor if you're concerned about anything, because you don't know for sure who you might have come in contact with who recently traveled and is coming back from somewhere. And again, we don't know how long this takes.
Live from Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
Okay, we are back. Thank you again for joining me here at iHub Radio. I am the lovable liberal. By the way, the phone number here is 760-544-8255. 760-544-8255. Or you can email a comment or question to studio@ihubradio.com. Talking about this coronavirus and the response worldwide, including in our own country. And among the things that have already happened around the world, the Swiss government has banned any public event that would have over 1,000 people. Mormons have canceled a key leadership event because they were concerned about the fact that this virus is out there. In Japan, the National Symphony canceled their concerts. Syria's biggest match, soccer match, was playing in an empty stadium. The Saudis have closed the holiest sites of Islam to foreigners. South Korea and the U.S. postponed their annual military drills. BTS, my very favorite K-pop pop group, canceled their tour and their shows in Seoul, South Korea. Tokyo Disneyland closed through mid-March. Schools have been closed. The upcoming Olympics in Japan may have to be canceled. I mean, do you really want to go and be in Olympic Village with people from all, countries all over the world where this is already an issue? What's going to happen locally with Coachella or with Stagecoach? The fallout, which in fact did lead to a lot of the concerns in the stock market. Airline reservations are being canceled like crazy. Flights are being canceled because airlines don't want to go to countries where it's really bad. When airlines aren't going anywhere, when people aren't traveling, restaurants go under because they have nobody to feed. Layoffs are taking place in businesses all over the world because supply lines are being shut down because we do live in an international marketplace, like it or not. What do workers without childcare do? I mean, there really is a huge economic impact to something like this. And I loved that I was listening to some of the commentators on Fox saying, well, only 2%. I mean, after all, you know, look how many people the flu kills every year and we don't shut down over that. Well, for what it's worth, so far, based on the numbers we have, and they are changing daily as we get more and more information, but so far the information we have is that approximately 2% of those who have gotten coronavirus have died. By comparison, just for the record, about 0.1% of all of those who get the flu have died. So coronavirus may, in fact, be much more lethal. But we don't know yet because, especially in our country, we haven't had enough cases to really know what the hell we're looking at. But the virus is roughly 20 times deadlier than the typical flu. And you have someone with the kind of reach like Rush Limbaugh, who said on his show, oh, this is no more than just something like a cold. That is so irresponsible. I don't care how much you want to protect the image of this president, but putting something like that out on the air. And here was the thing with Rush that absolutely, for me, as much as I like to listen to right-wing radio just to know what they're saying, a guy called into Rush's show and he identified himself as a retired Army Master Sergeant. And the Affordable Care Act was something he said he supported because it gave health care coverage to about 40 million of the poor and middle class in our country. And he compared the Affordable Care Act to the military's free medical care for all service members and their families. And this is what Rush Limbaugh had the gall to say out loud on talk radio to his millions of listeners. He said, "You see, Master Sergeant, you have exposed yourself. I thank you for the call and I thank you for your service. I really do. But you've exposed yourself. You like the idea of the government putting a Band-Aid on every little boo-boo you get, wiping your nose for you, giving you free prescription Advil when you could buy it at the drugstore like a taxpayer. You like the idea because you've lived with that your whole life. You joined the Army at 18. My guess is before that you were probably on welfare. Whether or not you ever go to war, you get free medicine, free food, a free place to sleep, even free clothes to wear every day. The taxpayer gives all of that to you. This is a man who got the Medal of Freedom and has the gall to use that kind of language on a member of the armed forces who is basically saying, we need access to health care for everybody. Duh! This is what happens when government doesn't work the way it's supposed to. And this is a perfect example of why we need government.
News, weather, and a couple of dozen loudmouths. This is iHub Radio. She calls it as she sees it. Now, here's Anita Rufus.
And I just noticed on the news there was a trailer that showed that there have been 1,000 new cases of confirmed coronavirus outside of China within the last 24 hours. There have been some more cases reported in the United States. And again, they don't know where it's coming from for sure or how it is being transmitted from one person to another. I will tell you, I went to, I don't know if you know and if you've ever taken advantage of the fact that University of California Riverside has a small campus in Palm Desert, right at Cook by the freeway, next to the campus where Cal State is. And UCR does some wonderful free community-wide lectures and presentations. They have a wonderful, wonderful variety of things that are of interest to us. And you should go on their website, UCR Palm Desert, and look at the things they offer. Everything from books and movies to environment and local history, things about it. I mean, they're really, really broad and interesting and well done. And so I went to this event that they were having about the music that changes our lives. And they had gotten RSVPs from enough people that they would have filled the whole auditorium. But the auditorium was less than a third full when we got there. Now, 2 weeks before that, we had been to something in that same auditorium that was packed. I think the reason that so many people did not show up that night this past week is because of fears about the coronavirus. It is not something to be joked about. It is not something to be politicized. But criticism of the response of our government is not politicizing the issue. It is genuinely asking why government isn't doing what we have government there to do. Now, there's a piece of good news this past week from the administration, and that is the agreement with Taliban militants about bringing an end to this war that we've been going through in Afghanistan for the last 18 years. Under this agreement, we would draw our forces down from 8,600 to about 13,000 over the next 3 or 4 months. And our remaining forces would withdraw in a little over a year. The president did say he wanted to end this idea of never-ending wars. However, this agreement is with the Taliban, not the democratically elected government that we helped to install in Afghanistan. And the big concern about this, yes, this war has dragged on and on and on. And whether it was appropriate for us to get into it or not, let history argue about that 18 years ago. But the Afghan government is not happy that they've been excluded from this, because they are at risk themselves from the Taliban. The Taliban refused to negotiate with the Afghan government. They would only negotiate first with the United States government. And here's my concern, as we are now in the first day of the month of Women's History Month. The women of Afghanistan, under the government we helped to install that is democratically elected, the women of Afghanistan have been able to serve in public positions. They've been able to go to school. The Taliban practices the most restrictive form of Islam. And the women of Afghanistan are now rightly concerned that what little freedom and rights they have gained as a result of this war and us being there and us helping to install a democratically elected government is now going to disappear. And I don't think the president even took that into account, or frankly, I don't think he was aware of it or even cared. While the president was in India, even though he gave a press conference where he trashed two of the Supreme Court justices, and I got to tell you, in my memory, I don't remember a president ever trashing a Supreme Court justice publicly. They may not have always agreed with a decision made by the Supreme Court, but in my memory, I cannot remember a president ever publicly trashing a Supreme Court justice. The president took on two, Sonia Sotomayor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and he said they should recuse themselves from any cases that involve his presidency in any way, because they've made comments that he found personally offensive. Well, guess what, Donnie? Get over it. Meanwhile, while he was in India, there were terrible riots in the streets. People were being killed because the Muslims and the Hindus are fighting each other. And part of the reason they are is because the president of India, Prime Minister Modi, who the president was having a love fest with, Modi has now pushed through a law that literally would disenfranchise the citizenship of Muslims living in India. It is a very controversial citizenship law, and it is important to at least remember, because we don't have much sense of history or international relations, India was formed as a multi-religious democracy. It was founded as a secular nation when they got their freedom and independence from Britain. And now this new law that Modi is pushing through would literally deny citizenship to the Muslims in India. Now, we also have the fact that the Trump officials are dismissing intelligence about Russia continuing to be involved in our elections, that they are again interfering in the U.S. presidential race. But it's interesting. They called it fake news. And, of course, the president absolutely goes crazy at anything that might deny the legitimacy of his election, even though he didn't get the popular vote, which of course he blames on fraud and people voting illegally. But the president is taking issue with the idea that Russia is trying to be involved in our election again. That's fake news. But the idea that they might be involved in trying to help Bernie Sanders, that's not fake news. Well, seriously, you can't have it both ways. Either what intelligence is telling you is true or it isn't. Now, I want to share something with you. I thought this was really funny, but you know how if you watch any of the sound bites from some of Trump's rallies, you know how he's been talking about toilets and showers, that showers are just dripping one tiny little drip of water, and that you have to flush a toilet 10 times? Well, part of this is because we have been trying to put in place the kind of regulations for the manufacture of things like faucets and showers and toilets to try and conserve as much water as possible. And I don't know if you are aware, if you travel much, there are some countries you go to, and there are even just some airports within our own country, where the toilet doesn't flush automatically, but it doesn't have one of those handles that you push down to make it flush. There are two buttons on the top of the toilet. And one of the little buttons has a water drop on it. And the other little button has a picture of something solid on it. And the purpose of those two buttons is, if what you have dispelled into the toilet is liquid, you push the button with just the water drop on it, and it has a very short flush. It empties the toilet, but it does it with very little water. If what you've put into the toilet is solid matter of any kind, you push the other button, and it flushes the toilet and uses a little more water to make sure that the toilet ends up clean. I think that's a brilliant solution. Well, there's an organization called WaterSense. And what they've done is try to go beyond the regulations that exist in the government for how you design things that use water. The regulations and energy standards started in 1992 with an Energy Policy Act that was signed by President Bush, Daddy Bush, and it set limits on how much water a toilet can utilize. And then in 1994, what went into effect was a standard that said all new toilet showerheads and faucets had to have water-saving designs. And ever since then, the federal government regulates the water flow of faucets and showerheads. Well, WaterSense, which was launched in 2006, actually provides an optional standard. Optional. That those who manufacture water, showerheads, toilets, faucets, they can actually follow this WaterSense standard that uses 20% less water, and that, of course, saves people money on their water bill over a year's period of time. But nowhere, nowhere are there regulations that say that a shower head has to just drip, or that you have to have toilets protected to the point where they have to be flushed 10 times. I don't know who said that to the president and got it inside his head, or whether he just has a personal physical problem that requires flushing the toilet 10 times, which I don't even want to think about. Now, I want to talk also about the fact that in Arizona, this is one of those things that I haven't heard anywhere on the news, but in order to build Trump's wall, they are now either stealing or killing Arizona's iconic saguaro cactuses. It is illegal to shoot or to deface these cactuses or to remove them from parks. They reach more than 60 feet high, they live up to 200 years, and at least half a dozen were already uprooted this month by crews with bulldozers clearing a dirt road so that they can build Trump's wall. Why isn't that being reported on the news? I got a couple more items like that that we haven't heard anything about that I think are really important. Like, did you know that the Constitution actually says that Trump cannot pardon Roger Stone?
Because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I want to talk about, by the way, thank you for listening. This is iHub Radio. I'm here live on Sundays from 10 to noon. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. The phone number here is 760-544-8255. You can text 760-699-0202, or you can email studio@ihubradio.com. I welcome your comments, your questions, and please feel free to let me know you'd like to be on my blast list. I put a blast up on Facebook. You can always go to Facebook and like Lovable Liberal or like me. But if you'd like to get on the blast list, I just need your email address. Nobody else sees those except me. And I send out a blast with a teaser for what Sunday's show will be about. I want to talk about the courts. I have often said that the only real important, serious justification for your vote in 2020 or any other time is who's going to appoint justices, particularly to the Supreme Court. But these lifetime appointments to appeals courts make a huge difference as well. The kinds of cases that the Supreme Court has coming up this term include about Obamacare and whether they will accept the federal judge in Texas who struck down the entire law in 2018, but now it's still pending. The court is considering whether the federal civil rights law known as Title VII prohibits workplace discrimination because of sex, and whether that in fact protects LGBT people. And it looked like when they heard arguments on this that one of the new justices appointed by President Trump, Neil Gorsuch, might be open to joining with the four liberal justices to rule for that protection of gay people. Decision to end the Obama program that provides work permits to about 700,000 immigrants who were brought here as children, the DACA program. They're going to make some kind of a ruling on that. Abortion is one of the issues that will be coming up. The end of this month, they're going to take up some of the most politically sensitive cases of this term. And that includes Trump's effort to kill subpoenas from Congress. But a federal appeals court this past week blocked the president's program that requires people seeking asylum at our southern border to stay in Mexico until their cases are heard, which sometimes can take years because he hasn't put enough judges in there to handle all of the people who are seeking asylum, even though most of them will not be granted asylum. The ones who deserve asylum at least need to be heard. And a federal appeals court blocked his ability to make them remain in Mexico, but of course that's being appealed, and he'll probably take that to the Supreme Court. The idea that Trump has been trashing the juror who was the foreperson in the Roger Stone case because she happens to be a Democrat who has actually said things publicly about being a Democrat. And Roger Stone's lawyers knew that when they allowed her to stay on the jury. Now, the federal judge overseeing that case warned the president that fomenting public anger about the guilty verdict could prompt someone to take it out on jurors personally, and that juror, who was the foreperson, has in fact received death threats. Even though other jurors who have been interviewed who were on that same jury said that she conducted the hearings absolutely impartially and professionally. Now, the president has floated this idea that he might want to try and overturn his impeachment because, of course, it was nothing but a hoax. Well, here's something I learned this week that I will share with you that I think is just beautiful. It turns out that when the Constitution in Article 2, Section 2, remember, president's always saying Article 2 gives me the right to do anything I want. Well, except Article 2, Section 2 does hold the power of impeachment. And in Article 2, Section 2, it says the president is given the power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, meaning federal crimes, except in cases of impeachment. Now, what does that mean? Well, what that means is the worst abuse of the pardon power, which was discussed by the founders when they wrote it, the worst abuse of the pardon power is a president protecting his own cronies who've been convicted of crimes that are related to the president's own wrongdoing. So he may have, based on the Constitution's text and historical evidence, he may have lost the power to pardon anyone who is found guilty of a criminal offense under federal law that is somehow related to his impeachment. The framers imagined that it might be possible for a president to try and pardon people who helped him commit what led to his own impeachment, whether he's removed from office or not. No less than George Mason at the 1788 ratifying convention in Virginia, leading to the adoption of the Constitution. Madison, who argued that this needed to be put into that Section 2, Article 2, Section 2. Mason said the president ought not to have the power of pardoning because he may frequently pardon crimes which were advised by himself. It may happen at some future day that he will establish a monarchy and destroy the republic. If he has the power of granting pardons, may he not stop inquiry and prevent detection of his own crimes? And that's why they wrote into Article 2, Section 2 that the president has the power to pardon, except in cases of impeachment. That may be why the president wants to overturn his impeachment. The more you dig into some of this stuff, the more you realize that there really are smart minds around, both in the past and in the present, who are there ostensibly to try and keep the worst from happening. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, and you are listening to iHub Radio.